setting up a summer reading list. So Adam Zwar, 12 summers. Daniel and Lilydale. Adam brings up a great point. At what age do you mature and stop the hero worship? Like Adam, I was around 25 and struggling with the concept. Still absolutely love the game, but in a different way. And we're about to talk the Mosquito Fleet. Some of the best times of my life as a kid watching the Mosquito Fleet of the Blues. Alex Marcoux was the most underrated out of all of them, stood up in big games. Buckley, Armstrong, Dominator, Piggy Harms, Jimmy Buckley, Ashman, Ken Sheldon, Ken Hunter, all absolute legends. What a team. So there's a rich sense of nostalgia to this. Lockie Waterman is the author of The Mosquito Fleet. Lockie, great to have you on the program.
Hi, Jared. Thanks for having me on the program.
How rich a place do the characters of those teams from 79 to 83 hold in not only the lore of Carlton, but in the history of the game?
Well, definitely they're right up there. I mean, on and off the field, they were just fantastic to watch on field. And that semi-professional era, Jared, just gave them that little bit of a license to have probably a little bit more fun than the current-day players.
What was your proximity to Carlton, Lockie?
My proximity, long story short, I, Glenelg boy, and John Nicholls came over and coached Glenelg in 1977. When I was a kid, for my ninth birthday, I got a North Melbourne jumper. And the great John Nicholls came up to me on the Tuesday night. I was just kicking the ball with my brother and a few locals on Glenelg Oval. This is before the grand final. And Big Nick came up to me and said, I don't want to see you in that grand, North jumper again. And like any nine-year-old kid, I just ignored him. And Thursday came back again. I was in the same jumper. It was number two, Stan Alves, on my back.
Ah, nice.
And flanked by the great Sid Jackson, Big Nick walked up to me again, put his hand on my head, and I thought he was going to crush me like a bug, and he just said one word. He said, Carlton. And that was my initiation into the club. I was a Carlton supporter ever since. So I was lucky I grew up with the great era, 79, 81, 82. It was a great time to watch footy and a lot of those small guys that you could emulate as a kid.
How'd you go about capturing the era in what you've put before us?
Yeah, good question, because a lot of the interviews were done over the phone because of the lockdown. So I think there's only about a handful of the interviews that were done face-to-face. But I think getting a feel for the year, it was an era of mullets and moustaches and tight shorts and footy exclusively on a Saturday. A real tribal feel about it. So footy on the terraces was a lot different to footy nowadays. And just that tribal hatred between Collingwood and Carlton, and Collingwood were just so hard to beat. You know, you never had them beaten, even if you were five or six goals up. They just were relentless. So there were a lot of tight tussles. So it was interesting to tap into that era and that mindset, that real rivalry. It still exists, but it's just faded a little bit because both teams haven't been up there at the same time, whereas in the 70s and 80s they were.
It's such rich source material with the names that we've mentioned, a few of them, but they're all household names in footy, and progressively they're making their way into the Hall of Fame as well. You asked Mark McClure to write the foreword, and he's sort of taken us to the core of philosophy, and to have sat with Sellers through the years is what they lived. He absolutely believes in, no matter how the world has changed, the fundamentals 100%. Of what they had around accountability and leadership, he still believes apply in the modern world.
And I tend to agree with Sellers. I think they still do apply. I think, Jared, I'm convinced they were 40 years ahead of their time in terms of field organisation, the forward defensive pressure, and the honesty and the immediacy with their game reviews. Now, it wasn't done in a professional environment. They were pretty much just at the top level of the social club having a beer and a party pie. But the honesty and the immediacy amongst the group just made every player accountable on the list. And I think that's a big thing that Sellers tapped into. And no one was immune from criticism, even Sellers or the captain or the vice captain down. So, but it was all done in a facetious way, but a very effective way.
and David Parkin's role. So sometimes the disapproving parents, sometimes the disciplinarian. So it's and the stories are legendary of going to the lodge and the like, and they all they tell them with great mirth now. It's, how did Parko rally them to get the best out of what they needed to do on the footy field?
Yeah, well, I think the main thing when Parkin arrived, he knew he had a good list. And they were a little bit wayward off-field, but the thing about the group was if there was a training session or a match, they just rallied and they just loved it. You know, they loved training and they trained well. But I think what he brought in 81 and 82, he just brought a bit more defensive focus, particularly up forward. And Jared, I can back that up with some stats. Bisasto, Peter, the great Peter Bisasto, had 16 tackles in a game one year, which is almost unheard of in the 80s. So that forward pressure in the forward half of the ground was a big Parkin initiative, you'd have to say. And he had guys like Johnston and McClure that bought into that. They were just ferocious at good and completely capable of keeping the ball in the front half of the ground. And I also think Parker did a couple of other things. He was one of the first coaches to initiate cameras behind the ground so they could have vision of behind the ground, which was cutting-edge stuff back in the early 80s. And he had three or four cameras on three players for the whole match. So, again, there was that accountability in terms of you know, you didn't go back into the back line when you should have. You skipped out to the wing. So there was accountability across the whole group.
And if I asked you to pick one player from the era who's your out-and-out favourite that appeals to the child still in you, who would it be?
Well, funnily enough, my favourite when I first watched the Mosquito Fleet, it would be Vin Cotoggio, the Cat. And he didn't play a lot of games, Vin, because it was pretty hard to get a game back then. But he only played 88 games for Carlton, and then he went to Melbourne and Sydney. But he was just he had the big mop of hair, and he was very evasive, quick, and very good player to watch. So he'd be the first one. In terms of, you get asked this a lot in terms of who was the best. It's hard to separate them, but certainly in terms of grand finals, you'd probably say Wayne Johnston was just a magnificent big game player. But Rod Ashman was right up there as well, just a fantastic player. One thing was quite noticeable, though, Jared, is not many of these guys, and I guess this is probably the advancements in sports science, not many of them played over 200 games. Jono, 209, Ashman, 236. Barry Armstrong, 204. And I think I've noticed that a lot more in the footy these days, and a lot more players are playing 300 games, probably because they're better prepared in terms of the recovery.
Yep, it's a great era to relive, Lockie. You've got a book signing next week, is that right, in Ballarat?
No, this Saturday, actually.
Oh, this Saturday.
It'll be this Saturday at the Independent Bookstore. There'll be 30 books that I'll be signing at 218A Skipton Street. There'll be some prizes and some giveaways, and there could even be a little cameo from local Val Perovic.
Oh, what a promise.
There you go.
Good on you, Lockie. Well done.
Not guaranteeing anything, but he could make an appearance. He just likes to keep it low-key these days, but it'd be great if he popped in.
Great stuff. The Mosquito Fleet, Lockie Waterman, for your summer reading list. Lockie, thank you.